Big show for you here today. Jory Epstein, senior NFL reporter, basically the biggest person in the know here at the NFL Scouting Combine, joins me to talk about free agency. What's going on? The quarterback dominoes. Matthew Stafford, where's he playing this year? Do we really buy the fact that he's not going to be back in LA? We also talk the wide receiver free agent market. It's T. Higgins and the olds. What do we make of this? Is T. Higgins going to be back in the Cincinnati Bengals? We've got a lot to say. Let's waste no more time. Let's get into it. It's Tuesday, February 25th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball because we are here in Indianapolis for the NFL Scouting Combine. My first time ever at the NFL Scouting Combine, and joining me to talk a little ball today is my good friend, Yahoo senior NFL reporter, Jory Epstein. Jory, what's going on?
Matt, love the enthusiasm for Tuesday. I feel like my day just got a jolt of energy. We were talking about energy and the lack thereof before the show started, but then I heard you be like, it's Tuesday, and now I'm ready to go. So I'm fired up. Happy to be here. How about you? This is combine number six for me.
Okay, so you are not a declining veteran in terms of like NFL years. You're right in your prime.
I hope so. We're going to find out by the end of the week.
I think we're all learning lessons here about ourselves here at the Scouting Combine. Again, my first time, and I got to say, Jory, it's all thanks to you. If the people, the listeners and the watchers, the viewers at home remember, it was about 365 days ago that you and I were on the show talking about how I'd never been to the Combine, and Jory said, we got to get you there next year. I can only assume that the only reason I'm sitting here is that Jory went to, I mean, probably every level of not just Yahoo Sports, but like Yahoo
Inc. See the emails I've been sending, the office visits I've been making. I'm like, forget Matt Harmon's immense talent and value to this company. I mentioned that he should be at the Scouting Combine.
So again, thank you to that. And thank you for doing the show. We have a packed show here to talk through. Here's how this is going to go. First segment, we're going to talk through quarterback dominoes because that is the most important thing. Everything starts from there. Second segment, we're going to talk through some wide receivers, and we're going to have some clips from both Duke Tobin, the top executive of the Cincinnati Bengals, and Bengals head coach Zach Taylor when we get into that. And then finally, we're going to finish with some ecosystems that could take off in 2024, a little bit of a Commanders style breakthrough for some offenses. So sound good?
Absolutely. Sounds good to me. Probably not to Dan Snyder, as you say, Commanders taking off, but
literally who gives a I think that's actually better for everybody.
I was just thinking of that ESPN article about like Dan Snyder not appreciating what they've done this year, and I'm like,
it's like, well, great, now everybody appreciates this more.
He just shuddered when you said that. He doesn't know why. He just knows.
I have a funny story about Dan Snyder and consuming my content to tell you off the air.
Okay,
so I will tell you that as soon as we get off this show. But yeah, he, let's just say like Dan might know I exist, and. Isn't,
that's something Dan and I have in common.
Great. All right. Well, that's one thing. and the yacht, that too. Okay, let's get into it. Let's talk quarterbacks here. Jory, the talk of the town when you're mixing it up with league folks, people in the media, you know, it's the typical, hey, when'd you get in? Where are you staying? How you doing? How's the family?
I'm triggered right now.
What the hell do you think is going to happen with Matthew Stafford? Like, that is the biggest thing that people are talking about here. So, let's get into it. What have you heard? What have you reported on in terms of Stafford and what's going on here?
Yeah, I think what's interesting is when a team says, hey, you should explore your options, it's clear that they are open to something happening. And it's also clear that I don't view this the same as when Lamar Jackson got permission from the Ravens to go talk to people, but there was a tender on him. Hey, you've got to give us these picks. Like, that's not where we're at here. And so I think that we have seen Sean McVay move on from a quarterback. He's been to the Super Bowl with him before. I'm not comparing the style of play or even necessarily the level of play of Matthew Stafford and Jared Goff, but there are certain coaches in the league who will ride something for maybe longer than they should, and others who say, hey, I'm ready for the next thing. And so I think that this is a real thing. And I also would say that I had an executive tell me today that they believe Stafford really is that first domino in the quarterback market, because until they know, one, if the Rams need a quarterback, and two, if Stafford's going somewhere else, some of those guys like Aaron Rodgers, who we already know for sure are available, there's a little more uncertainty on them. And also you could argue that with Stafford and Russell Wilson and Justin Fields and Aaron Rodgers, like Stafford played at the most consistently high level last year. So he's also younger than Aaron Rodgers and some of these guys.
Oh, yeah. Everybody on my list to talk through today, there's no question that he's the best quarterback that is potentially available this offseason. Or I guess we could say at this point is available. But so it's interesting because I want to kind of throw this back to when this first started to trickle out there, which is right after the Rams lost to the Eagles in the postseason, which, as anybody that is having this conversation loves to point out, they were right there. They were right there about to, you know, about, could have beat the Eagles like one throw away from the NFC Championship game, which I don't know. That I think that's maybe misplaying how close that game felt at times. I think one team was much more talented than the other. But anyways, initially when this comes out, like, all right, Stafford might be he might be on the move or isn't sure. I was like, what are we talking about here? Like, why would he not just come back to this team? But this is correct me if I'm wrong. This is truly just like a money issue, right?
Correct. Yeah. I mean, our colleague Charles Robinson did great reporting about this last year, and this is during training camp when they restructured Matthew Stafford's contract. And there was an understanding of, hey, we're going to make it right in 2024, but it's going to mean that the 2025 contract is unlikely to be something that works out for both sides. So I do think that that was where they stood. They didn't know where to be. And again, previously he had had some injuries, whether or not they totally impacted his game, and you didn't know if he was going to be able to play at the high level. And then you look at how the Rams finished the year this year, and he was playing so well and the team was playing so well that it complicated things in some matter, because if you have a guy who already didn't have necessarily level guarantees that he thought he deserved and then he plays even better, well, then he's going to want more, understandably. So I will say, I'm not saying that the game was closer than it was or less close, but I was around the Eagles. I was at all four of their playoff games. And talking to the Eagles after the game and in the coming weeks and after leading up to the Super Bowl, I mean, they really felt like they were on the brink of losing. Okay. Like, that's the closest they felt to losing, not just from a score standpoint, but also just what Stafford had done that day, even though their style was much better equipped to handle the snow. So I'll give them a little credit there, but...
Well, no, I think that actually is a good way of framing exactly what Stafford is at this point, which, like, he did play extremely well in the postseason, really just ever... Week 18, obviously, Jimmy Garoppolo plays. We're going to get to Jimmy in a second here, unfortunately. But... Sorry, but that's how I feel
Jimmy
about this.
Jimmy Garoppolo catching strays.
Oh, hey, what are you doing here if you're not catching a few strays? I think ever since like that Week 18 game, after that, he played lights-out football. But Stafford, it wasn't as if he was playing that level the entire year. He's a guy who's 37 years old. I think he's coming off probably his worst season in L.A. He has had consistent injury, like flare-ups, even if he hasn't missed a ton of time due to injury. So that's sort of what makes this difficult, because he's not – a tier one quarterback, but he's in the exact right type of tier that if he gets hot and just plays out of his mind, I think he can push you to, like, he can push a team like the Eagles to the brink.
And I'll say again, I grew up in this industry in Dallas. I was there for the first 7 years of my career, and I'm still around them a decent amount. And the whole knock on Dallas is, oh, so you won 12 games in the regular season. Well, what'd you do in the playoffs? And so I think if that's what we're saying, what'd you do in the playoffs, then as long as you get to the playoffs and then you ball out there, that's what I'm going to judge you on the basis of, because the Rams aren't looking for a quarterback who can win them regular season games. They're looking for a quarterback who can win enough games to get to the playoffs and then win in the playoffs and elevate his play at that time. I mean, again, Patrick Mahomes, and I know they won 15 games this year, but when you look at what he does, it's when you tell me Chiefs, Bills, I'm always like, all right, in the regular season, I'm taking the Bills. In the playoffs, I'm taking the Chiefs, because generally, Super Bowl game not included, and that Eagles team is just so good, he's going to elevate his level of play.
Yeah, 100%. So this is just such a tough one in terms of what do we think is going to happen with Stafford, because you're smarter than me and much more like plugged in with these things, so you probably actually have a better sense of it. To me, again, I hear this the first time, I'm like, this doesn't make any sense. No way. Like, he's going to just be back in LA, because that's like, it doesn't make sense for me, for him at this point in his career, to go elsewhere, because this is his best spot to potentially win a championship. But then as the money talks come out, you kind of hear some of the reasons that LA might be hesitant to just like give him whatever he wants. Then I start to think, well, you know, once we start talking about the guy being traded, he's probably out of here. Like, now, right. I think it's like more likely to happen than not. But then as I've sat here, and again, he's out there, like, his agent has permission to talk to other teams or whatever, that does feel very much like, okay, some team's going to set the market and then the Rams are just going to match that.
Yeah, I mean, I would – you think the Rams will match that?
Depending on what the offer is, my guess is that he's probably – like, who's the team that's going to just give him the Godfather offer?
With the Raiders?
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, again, Tom Brady is super involved. There was actually interesting. A bunch of the head coaches and general managers have been talking today in Indianapolis, including Raiders coach Pete Carroll, which still feels weird to say.
Yeah. And I was out there writing my story, and Pete was doing a bunch of the, like, local media out there. It's just like, I still see him in Seahawks.
But yeah.
I'm still getting used to it.
I think he still sees himself in Seahawks. But all of that said, I was surprised with how Pete Carroll was describing the role that Tom Brady plays in the organization, because for a long time now, there have been rumblings and then louder rumblings about the role Tom Brady plays, the influence he has on the decisions he makes. And the understanding was kind of, and again, I've had people coaching execs like tell me directly, like, oh, yeah, Tom's opinion matters. Tom wants this. Tom wants that. And then you have Pete Carroll say on the record today, when asked how often he talks to Tom Brady, you would think he would want to downplay Tom Brady's influence, because the man's not the formal, like, controlling owner. Yeah. He's not the general manager, and he's not the head coach. He's a Super Bowl winning quarterback, obviously, 7 times, but he's not that. And instead, when asked about Tom Brady, he said that Tom is available every day.
Wow.
And he's a very curious person. They want to have conversations. He's always available to call and text. And so there's all of these conversations. And I'm like, okay, well, then what does Tom Brady want? That's what I've been trying to figure out the last couple of days. What does Tom Brady want in a quarterback? And I was asking someone, hey, if it's someone with more arm talent than him versus a more maniacal work ethic, or maybe not more maniacal, but similarly maniacal,
in the ballpark,
what does he value more? And Matthew Stafford, I think, has the work ethic and the talent. I think that he kind of fits both of those boxes. And so if you are a Raiders team and you're trying to be interesting, if I'm Tom Brady, I'm probably being like, yeah, you should get that guy.
Raiders have $99 million in cap space. I mean, it's doable, right? They could do it. And this is why this is such an important conversation to have, because certainly from, like, a fantasy perspective, number one, there's gonna be a lot of fallout in LA that we have to talk about too. Like, whoever Stafford gets is gonna get an immediate bump in terms of, like, if it is Brock Bowers,
right?
If it is the Giants and Malik Nabers, you know, right. Like, there's that number one target is going, like, that is one of the things that people talk the most about, is like, Stafford is a kingmaker in terms of the wide receiver position. Calvin Johnson, Cooper Kupp, Puka Nacua, like, who is that next guy? I mean, shoot, even go back to the Detroit days with, like, Kenny Golladay was having his best years when him and Matt Stafford were just flinging the ball down the field in weirdly Darrell Bevell's offense. I think I can see it. The Raiders one, it just, like, again, you have the best chance to win a championship if you're Stafford in LA. So I get, and far be it from me to sit here and, like, judge a man for what he does and does not want, but I think that ultimately is the question. Do you want to win the Super Bowl?
Win another Super Bowl.
Another Super Bowl? Or do you want to get another big contract? Because you've gotten plenty of those too.
Right. And also, he might not be the only one in the family with a say in this. So I think that is relevant too.
That is also
And I'll
relevant.
Do that. The other nugget I'll say about the Raiders that I think is interesting is listening to Pete Carroll talk today. He was talking about a quarterback competition, and the question initially was more, or his answer initially was more about why he doesn't need to know now who the quarterback is. He talked about having a competition with Russell Wilson back in the Seattle days. Russell won it. And you'd think if you said, and he won it, which worked out blank, what adjective do you think he would have used?
Worked out well.
Worked out well. Worked out great. Worked out, we found a long-term answer. He was like, which worked out fine. And I was like, fine?
Fine.
I mean, like, how many Pro Bowls does a man have? How much is he cooking? There was 2 Super Bowls he went to. You won one of them. And I was surprised. But to me, what was interesting about that is I had asked some Seattle people around Senior Bowl time, hey, do you think that Pete would want Russ again? Because people were saying, like, Russ to the Raiders. And I was like, didn't Pete want to get Russ out? And they're like, yeah, but one of the best things about Pete is he has a short memory. And then now I'm hearing him say, like, Russell Wilson worked out fine. And I'm like, okay, well, that makes me question the degree to which the Raiders are interested in Russ. That's what I do. You listen to these interviews, almost all of them are complete, like, we want winners. We want to win now and for a long time. And then every once in a while, they say something like that where you're like, the way you just said it to me tells you how you feel. I could be wrong. Maybe they end up getting Russ, but that made me less confident that they will go after Russ.
Right. I mean, it's definitely on my radar. Is the beef squashed? Maybe the beef is not squashed, or at least there's some bad blood there enough to be like, we'll go in a different direction. So that's really where things stand with Stafford right now. And we're just kind of trying to figure that out. Okay. So that's where things stand with Stafford right now. Let's talk a little bit about the Rams here, just because I think there's two very interesting paths that they could take. Obviously, one with Stafford, one without. And I think that would then, their decision on him would impact the rest of everything else that comes from this offseason. No kidding, not a smart statement by me. But let's explore the universe where Stafford's not here. Because again, big impact there. There's a lot of players we care about on that Rams roster. Obviously, number one receiver, Puka Nacua, Kyren Williams. But it's not, Stafford's not the only outstanding question we have about this team. They have questions at wide receiver because they're moving on from Cooper Kupp. He's not going to be on this roster next year. They also have a big question at left tackle, too, because Alaric Jackson's a free agent. And I was telling you this earlier, it's not like a – it's a weird free agent class where there are some options you can squint at and see some startable players. Ronnie Stanley, I think, is kind of the bell of the ball. There's Cam Robinson. There's Jackson himself. There's Dan Moore, who's been like a – acceptable starter for the Steelers at left tackle. Tyron Smith, who you know well from Dallas, he may retire after his season ended with a neck injury. We'll see what happens. But if he comes back, I think somebody could be like, give him a shot for half a season or whatever.
Right.
And then like there's a former first-round pick in Jedrick Wills, who is benched, probably is not a future left tackle. But again, it's a market where you can squint at some options there. So I can't tell if that means that Jackson, because in my mind, young starting left tackle, he gets the market, he's going to get a bigger deal than probably what the Rams want to pay him. But again, if you have Stafford, do you have more urgency to keep that position intact? So how much do we buy like that the Rams are just willing to walk into the quarterback wilderness? And does that wilderness include a veteran stopgap, like a Rodgers, who you mentioned earlier? Does it include starting Jimmy Garoppolo for a season? Like, where are we at with that?
Yeah. There is a report today that the Rams are comfortable with Jimmy Garoppolo, and I'm not saying that the report is inaccurate or not valid. I'm sure that it is. I believe it was Diana Rossini, and she's a great reporter, unless there was someone else who had that first. What I will say is comfortable and want to do it. Like, I don't know. To me, the language of comfortable doesn't really excite or convince me. To me, when I hear why the Rams would be comfortable moving on from Matthew Stafford if they don't want to pay that money and if they want to do like soft rebuild, which they don't even really need to do a rebuild again. This was kind of going to be a rebuild. Like, they lost Aaron Donald. They've lost guys in recent years and not like let off when they've been healthy. But to me, when Aaron Rodgers is one of the most fascinating dominoes, even at this stage in his career, and not only because of the headlines he makes. And when I talk to people around the league and I say, what do you expect to decide the Aaron Rodgers question? It will be, can he find somewhere where they're ready to win now? Because he's not going to play somewhere that isn't at this stage in his career. He's going to be 40, or he is 41. And can a team feel like they are comfortable with everything that comes with Aaron Rodgers on and off the field? So as someone put it to me today, as an executive said, there's no shortage of egos in this league. So there are going to be people who believe that they are confident enough and have the – they are going to have sufficient confidence that they have the structure to keep Aaron Rodgers intact. Now, the two who are most likely to actually get this done is Mike Tomlin in Pittsburgh and Sean McVay in Los Angeles. And I actually think if you have someone offensively who is in charge of keeping Rodgers at bay, like, you're telling me that Aaron Rodgers is going to tell Sean McVay, hold on, Nathaniel Hackett's calling plays? No, of course not. The number of people who would love to be around McVay, I think that McVay is probably one of the few play callers and few coaches who Rodgers would not be able to say, I feel intellectually superior to you in terms of football IQ, and I know what's better. And I think that would be very good for him at this stage in his career. Now, one executive I told that to go, like, a zebra doesn't change his stripes years. I don't think it's him changing his stripes, though. I mean, there was a line in Ian O'Connor's biography of Aaron Rodgers that basically talked about Aaron Rodgers losing confidence in Mike McCarthy because he felt intellectually superior than him to him. And that's where I get this from. And I think it's, first of all, I think feeling intellectually superior to anyone is an unhelpful way to go through life and just a way to not learn from people. That is a side conversation. But if Aaron Rodgers is operating from that premise, I do think there's something to be said for, hey, I have this immense talent. I've seen this game in certain ways. And now you put the Rodgers football IQ, a Sean McVay football IQ. I mean, I wonder if we've ever had a stronger offensive brain trust at quarterback and head coach than that.
Yeah. I'm glad you framed
quarterback
it this,
and play caller,
sure.
I should say.
I'm glad you framed it this way because, again, my initial reaction to the idea, and my buddy James Coe pitched this to me, I think, a couple weeks ago, where if there's no more Stafford, what about Rodgers in L.A.? I'm like, phew. No. Like
he that. Also has a house there.
He has a house there. Real estate's important. Initially, I just kind of wanted to wave it off because of the whole, like, Rodgers brings so much baggage with him. But as you're framing it, I can see how the Rams and Sean McVay and everything that they do there, like, that is maybe one of the spots where they would be able to tell Rodgers, like, this is the current.
Yeah.
Like, swim in this current or don't jump in the river. You know, right. Like, this is what we do here. You have to fit into that instead of we're going to make everything about you. Like, if Rodgers signs with the Rams, they're probably not signing, like, Alan Lazard and all of his buddies, you know? Like, I think...
Great dude, by the way.
Lazard?
Delightful to work with.
I mean, I'm sure he's wonderful, but you probably don't want to pay him $44 million
if you're
the Jets.
But think about it. Like, I always say, well, who has someone been able to handle beforehand? And you have Mike Tomlin, who, what, Antonio Brown?
Yeah. Like, a lot of personality.
He was able to handle that, among others.
Rodgers being Rodgers is a cakewalk.
And while
Odell
Beckham is no AB, like, Odell Beckham, I feel like in New York, he was kicking nets and all that type of stuff. In Cleveland, his dad was getting him out. And I know he wasn't with the Rams for that long, but he was happy there.
Yeah, and that's a perfect example of a player that got into the current,
right.
You know? And I also think, too, from a football standpoint, McVay has been able to sort of have a foot in both camps in terms of, at times, we can get back to sort of the Jared Goff type offense. You know, we're under center, we're outside zone, play action, all that stuff. They're not as much an outside zone team anymore. But, you know, the more base concepts that they brought to that team when they came in 2017 and revived Jared's career. At the same time, when Stafford's been there, they've also been able to go drop back heavy, you know, shotgun, empty, spread it out. More traditional quarterback stuff, which is that's what Rodgers wants to do. But we have proof of concept of him at a moment where his career needed not reviving, but a little extra life after the McCarthy exit of him meeting Matt LaFleur halfway. I think if he was in LA, he'd probably have to meet them more than halfway. But if Rodgers, and again, this is tough, like we're trying to get in Rodgers' headspace. You mentioned ego. Like if he doesn't want to have his ego bruise and his last act in the NFL either be flaming out with the Jets when they did make everything about him or playing the 2025 season with the damn Titans or something like that. This is the best result.
Right. I mean, I think also I had a GM who thought he would retire because no one would want him because the teams would either not want to deal with the baggage or they would say, we want to build, especially like a new coach. Like when I was talking about the Jets at that point and they hadn't yet made their decision and there was an idea that they would rather build an offensive system that could be the offensive system for their quarterback for years to come and build them towards winning instead of winning more games in year one. Not that they want to lose games, but have an ascent rather than a descent.
Yeah.
I don't know. The Rams seem more comfortable with short-term solutions than a lot of people. And I also think that they could give him a system that will really allow him to thrive.
And this kind of brings us to Sam Darnold, too, because my one thing that I feel I felt consistent about is that it makes no sense for the Rams to – and this has been like a popular, you know, internet theory – move on from Matthew Stafford and like sign Sam Darnold because – there's system familiarity, right? He just played with Kevin O'Connell, who comes off the Rams tree. Like, I get that part of it. I get why Darnold would want to do it.
Yes.
But I don't think it makes sense from a Rams perspective. I think if they move on from Stafford, they will do a bridge situation. It will be a Garoppolo year, maybe like a late day two, early day three type rookies involved here. Maybe they something like that. Or they go the Rodgers route for 1 year. They're not going to give a multi-year commitment to a guy like Sam Darnold. But who is that team in your mind that might want to give Sam Darnold that multi-year commitment?
That is so fascinating. And I really think, I mean, first of all, I definitely talked to executives from multiple teams around the league at the end of the season who fully agreed, like there was no one who said otherwise, that Sam Darnold unfortunately cost himself money toward the end of the year. And it was such a bummer because it's like he's kind of easy to root for think about what the Jets did to him and how he's worked his way back and what he was doing this year.
Also, and like you said with Lazard, I've had a chance to talk with Sam multiple times over the years. Just great dude. Yeah.
I had last year at media night for the Super Bowl and he was still with the Niners. I was talking to him and then they're like, okay, time's up. And he could have just left. And he was like, no, I'm good. Like, keep going. Like, however long you need. And I really appreciated that. And like, you remember moments like that because you didn't have to do it. It wasn't like a public moment. But it really is a good question. So Kevin O'Connell, first of all, the Vikings are still probably a top 2 to 3 option for where he stays. I don't know that it's likely because we just saw them want to move off from Kirk Cousins too soon, so to say, rather than too late. And they do have J.J. McCarthy. But I think part of that will be what is Sam Darnold willing to take financially? Is he willing to take a 1 or 2 year deal to stay with the Vikings? If it's higher money, how much will that cost? Kevin O'Connell spoke very proudly today when he said, I love Sam. We talk all the time. We've talked a lot through the season, and I'm proud for him that he is viewed in the NFL as a starting quarterback, as a quarterback who can start in the league. The question is, who's going to want to pay that? Because to me, if I look at a team, let's say like the Browns, like if you're the Browns, assuming you don't decide to roll with the rookie, someone like Kirk Cousins is probably going to be more financially palatable because the Falcons are going to be paying a lot of the salary. There are other guys like, okay, if you take someone who's got a more athletic style, well, maybe you want a Justin Fields, so you have two quarterbacks who can play in the same system. So to me, there's not a clear answer. I mean, I was like writing down all of the teams, maybe Tennessee, Brian Callahan, yeah. But I even that, like, there's no team that I'm like, oh yeah, that makes sense. Like the Steelers don't make sense for Sam Darnold.
You don't think?
Do you think so? Tell me why.
I think they could because I like Arthur Smith as an offensive coordinator. Yeah. I'm still like one of the few people that hold on to like what he did in Tennessee. I think he's done some good things. If they brought in Sam, I think there are a couple of things that are musts. I mean, they have to improve the second receiver position, and I think they have to improve the run game, you know, one way or another. So it's not an easy, like, okay, we got Sam Darnold. Like, we're going forward now. I think the Steelers do have bigger problems, even though they framed it here this weekend, Omar Khan and the guys talking about it. Like, yeah, we got to figure out quarterback. Like, that's the big thing. We get that, but there are other things they need to figure out too. But I do think they can put together an offense that makes sense for him from like a play action standpoint. I can see him being a little bit akin to like a Ryan Tannehill. Like, get him under center, give him a first read, get it out quick, like play action over the middle. He can do that stuff. I think there's some not perfect like language system, but there's some conceptual overlap from what Arthur Smith does and what Kevin O'Connell does.
What would you think about him going to the Giants? Because I think like mentally he should, or psychologically, he should not go to the Jets. I was talking to someone today about how when a quarterback is like psychologically hurt, and I don't mean that as like them being soft, but just when you have all these people telling you it doesn't work, or you have all these examples of it doesn't work, and oh, by the way, millions of people are watching it not work.
I mean, Joy, you don't have to tell me whether you've ever backslid in a relationship before. I can tell you I have. You don't do it. Not a good thing. Like, you broke up the first time, it flamed out for a reason. Don't get back together. That we can just leave it at that.
Yes, let's do that. You don't need to be seeing ghosts of that relationship.
No.
But I do think the
happily married man, not my wife, to be clear.
But I do think it's interesting because when you think about it, when you think about harnessing potential in a quarterback, I mean, obviously the main reason Brian Daboll got the Giants job is because what he was able to do with Josh Allen. I don't think Sam Darnold and Josh Allen are that similar players. And I also don't think that what Dabes did with Josh Allen, he's going to be able to do with everyone. He didn't do it with Daniel Jones, but I think Sam Darnold's more talented than Daniel Jones. I think he'd have Malik Nabers. I think he'd have a good quarterback coach. So, I mean, if they need someone, also they don't have, I mean, if you're the Browns or the Titans, you can go get Cam. You can go get Shadur.
Like,
the Giants don't have a clear answer this year. And also they have a head coach and general manager on the hot seat. So
yes.
I think when you look at that, you can't just, I think it's unlikely they can just draft one of the, like the fourth or fifth quarterback and build. That would have been great 3 years ago. You're kind of late in your process now.
Yeah, see, they make sense to me as a Stafford team if he does get dealt. I don't think it makes sense for Stafford, but I think it makes sense for them because they just reek of desperation. And I think desperation creates moves also like, okay, we didn't get Stafford.
Malik Nabers with Stafford would be insane considering what he was able to do with nobody.
Yeah, he'd probably be like a 1,600-yard receiver.
Yeah.
If Stafford like could stay healthy and all of that stuff. There is a lot of risks with the Stafford acquisition at this point in his career. Like, I don't think it would go full
Rodgers.
The last
2 years, he's played a lot more games than everyone thinks either. He has one.
Yeah. I do think that
I'm
Tom
not
Brady.
Played him all healthy.
I think Tom Brady has tricked all of our brains into being like, yeah, quarterbacks can just play deep into their 40s,
right.
Which not always true. Like, I mean, and there's a lot of juice in Stafford's arm to lose, but regardless, we did the Stafford stuff. Darnold too, makes sense for the Raiders as well. I think those are two teams that probably don't have like a direct path to.
Do you think Tom Brady's telling them to go get Sam Darnold? I don't.
I would have said it a little more confident and like Sam Darnold makes sense for the Raiders. But after your Tom Brady talk, I'm like,
it's a big deal.
Yeah. So maybe not there. Before we move on to the wide receivers, just because we talked Sam Darnold, Reclamation Project quarterbacks. I mean, he is kind of the poster boy, the face right now of the Baker Mayfields, the Geno Smiths, the Reclamation Bros. Jared Goff, you can put in this group too. Justin Fields, Jameis Winston, Danny Dimes, those guys are all going to be free agents. Any reporting that you've done on like what the league thinks about these guys? Is there one that might be more interesting in terms of like a Reclamation Project?
I think Justin Fields is the most interesting just because of that skill set, because of what we've seen Lamar Jackson, Jalen Hurts, like these guys with dual threats. I mean, again, Super Bowl was just won by a quarterback with immense dual threat ability. And I'm not knocking what he did with his arm. He had a great game with his arm in the Super Bowl, but what he did with his legs was so key to how Saquon worked. I mean, again, if you get dual threat quarterback with running back and offensive line, Justin Fields really hasn't played with great running back and offensive line. And so I think that if you say, well, how have they done relative to their surroundings? I believe Justin Fields exceeded his surroundings at both of the last two stops he's had. And I think he exceeded what someone would expect from you in that situation. And when you have that skill set, there are a lot, someone in the league is going to believe that they have the answer. So I think he's the most interesting of that.
Any spot?
Now, the question is, what are you going to pay him for that?
Sure. Well, I think he'd probably get like, what, a one-year deal, maybe?
He would be interesting with the Jets because, again, you probably got to shore up the offensive line a little bit because they tried last year, and I wouldn't say they had a huge success. But with Breece Hall, with Garrett Wilson, I mean, the talent you've got there in terms of your skill players, I think is interesting.
To me, and I've said this before, that if you – just in the lens of if the Steelers brought back Fields, yeah, I think they could not walk into the season with what they did last season, which is – you know, some okay running backs and like one starting level wide receiver, and that's it. Because I think the part that you outlined with Jalen Hurts, like, I agree, having a great run game is a good part of it. But the thing that and good offensive line play obviously is crucial too. But we can't underrate the fact that they have two matchup problems at wide receiver.
Absolutely.
And that gives you so many answers and options for a guy like Fields, who Hurts doesn't have this same problem, and that's why there's like levels to this particular archetype. Fields is a sack eater. And the best way to like not get him into that position is to give him multiple options, multiple concepts in the route. So like I think of a team like Indianapolis, where how invested are they in Anthony Richardson at this point? Ballard has said over and over again, competition. I think Fields makes perfect sense as competition there because, like, number one, I think if they just went straight up training camp, like Fields might beat out a guy like Anthony Richardson.
And I think so. I went to training camp there last year and I was telling the beat writers, I'm like, Joe Flacco looks way better. You know that, right? I get it's training camp, but you know he looks way better.
Doesn't help then when you get into the real games and like people can put pressure on Joe Flacco. But again, the fact that it's even a conversation.
But my
is
point
not great.
Is that if you're making this training camp consideration, Justin Fields is going to look really good in training camp too.
I think. And I think he looked good for the Steelers in training camp.
He did.
And again, I think his limitations and the offensive limitations last year collided, I think, in a place like Indianapolis, which isn't perfect, but they do
have
a lot of receiver
talent.
Shane
Steichen has the Jalen Hurts' best season was with Shane Steichen, and that should give someone confidence that he could do something similar with Justin Fields, who I think has more similarities to Jalen Hurts, even if not the same proven arm talent.
And I think from a fantasy perspective, wherever Fields goes, people are going to be interested because he brings the rushing bonus. And I do think he's not a receiver maximizer. Like, I'm just thinking, if I'm Garrett Wilson and you're giving me like truth serum, I would probably want a Jameis Winston because he's going to come in there and throw me 180 balls. And
if you're a receiver, interception, you throw to me.
Right, exactly. We're not going to win a lot of football games. We're probably not going to win a lot of football games anyways. I might as well just have one of those seasons where I stuff the stat sheet right before a contract year. Whereas if you get Justin Fields in there, it's probably bringing the overall offensive volume down, but could potentially make it a more dangerous unit. But all right, let's take our first break. We come back, we got a lot to talk about the Bengals. We got a lot to talk about wide receivers right after this. All right, we're back. Jory, now we're in my wheelhouse. Okay, we're talking about wide receivers here. Let's do this thing. Before we get to some free agents and all of our Bengals stuff, I did just want to address that we have a contract that was signed here. Well, it wasn't signed physically here, but the news broke this week that the Bills and wide receiver Khalil Shakir agreed to terms on a four-year contract extension worth up to $60.2 million, including $32 million guaranteed at signing. That was per Adam Schefter this morning. That puts Shakir well outside the top 24 wide receivers in terms of APY. His $50 million average per year salary puts him between like Jerry Jeudy and Cortland Sutton. Jeudy's making $17 million. Sutton's due a new contract, but he's making $13 million right now. Feels like a pretty nice little value for Khalil Shakir, who has become an integral player to this Bills offense.
Right. He went from 611 yards and two touchdowns after, 161 and 1, Then you got 6-11-2, and now he's coming off a season where he got 821 yards and 4 touchdowns in the regular season. And I think when you look at it, to me, what most spoke is the fact that Amari Cooper came and wasn't really getting targets and wasn't really having anything going on. And it's like, yeah, because you had other guys who were getting done what needed to be done. And you had a year where I'm not saying his numbers were like Stephon Diggs,
yeah,
but the production of the offense as a whole with the running game and with some Khalil Shakir was enough. And so I think it's super smart of the Bills to say, hey, let's lock this up. It's working for us. It's working for us on the field. It's working for us off the field. We've got a running back who's going to go light it up. We've got a quarterback who's going to light it up on in the air and on the ground. Let's just make sure we can stay put and also do this early so we have money elsewhere.
And he's a guy who, from a fantasy perspective, he does have a limited ceiling because he doesn't play on every down. None of the Bills wide receivers were full-time players, but he's their most important guy because he gives Josh Allen like the easy buttons.
Right.
Like, he's there. He's open in the flat. He's open on a quick hitter. He's a great zone beater, but he can also beat man on kind of these quick hitting ISO routes, and he can do something with the ball in his hands. I'm obsessed with these types of wide receivers, especially against more of the two high defenses and things like that. Like, not only do you want to create layups for your quarterback, but whoever that layup player is, yeah, do something with the ball once you get in your hands. And like, he was one of the best after catch receivers in the league last year.
Well, and also you might have a limit on what he can do from a fantasy perspective, but I think that there's not much limit on what he can do for Josh Allen from perspective, because even if he's only catching the ball occasionally and getting that occasionally, well, if it's a first down and he keeps Josh on the field, then a lot more is happening.
Oh yeah, like first downs per route run against zone coverage. He was one of the highest performing receivers, especially in that short and underneath area.
So 35 first downs last year in the regular season.
Keeping the offense moving, man. Like, that's critical. So good for a guy who just underrated, like, day 3 pick, has worked himself to this position. A prospect I really like in that year's draft too. So shout out to me. Speaking of shout out to me, let's talk about these Bengals wide receivers. And shout out to you, Jory, because you've done some great reporting on these Bengals wide receivers. You filed a piece for Yahoo. Let's move into this. Let's actually hear from Bengals top executive Duke Tobin speaking about some of the contract issues that Cincinnati is facing this offseason.
T. Higgins. Seems like 3, 4, or 5 years I've been talking about T. I think you guys all know what I feel about T. Higgins. I think T. Higgins is a fantastic football player, and I want him on my football team. Whenever I'm in charge of a football team, I want T. Higgins. And so I'm going to do what I can to get T. Higgins. Our preference with T. Higgins is to do a long-term agreement. Always has been. It continues to be. And we'll work hard to get that done. You know, we are fortunate. We've got a lot of really good football players. Fantastic football players, and we're fortunate to be in a position to where we can fit them all in. We've managed our cap well. We've got low dead money. We want a high payroll and low dead money so the people that are in Cincinnati playing for us can get all the money. That's what we want, and we're in a position to re-sign these guys, and it's a good position to be in. It really is, and we're going to attack it, and hopefully, we don't want to just re-sign these guys and pay more for the same football team we had last year. We want to add to it as well. So we want to re-sign these guys, reward them for their ability level, and add to the football team. So it's a tall task. We think we're up to it, and Katie's got us in position to attack it well.
So I thought Duke gave some very interesting kind of nuggets out there. And just especially what stood out to me was that T. Higgins' top priority, and the priority is to bring him back on a long-term contract. We know he's most likely getting the franchise tag at any day now. That'll probably become official.
Yeah, Duke Tobin goes, yes, I'm aware I have the franchise tag.
Which, you know, that's great. I haven't seen Duke talk too much. He was good.
He's great.
He was good at the podium. So very interested to see kind of like what they're able to do there, because Zach Taylor later talked about how, you know, it was Duke that said this, that the guys who are without a contract are the first priority, and obviously that leaves us T. Higgins. So I know there's still some talk that he could potentially, you know, be a tag and trade candidate. I don't know. I go back and forth on this one too, because, you know, Duke also said that they don't want to just pay more for last year's team. So
right.
Do we think he's back in Cincinnati or what?
It's so challenging, because I think, first of all, there's kind of a two-part element here of T. tea is the most urgent issue mm-hmm. for their negotiations, yes. but Jamar is their top priority.
Yes.
And he said that Jamar is our priority. He has been our priority. He will be our priority. So they, and I was, and I'm not trying to get off tea, but this is relevant to tea because it's the same salary cap we're working from here. I was fascinated that Duke Tobin said on the record, relatively unprompted, Jamar Chase is not just their priority, but that he will be the highest paid non-quarterback in the league. And I know we saw that with Justin Jefferson and CeeDee Lamb last year, but that doesn't mean you're going to keep going and going. And, oh, by the way, Micah Parsons might get a deal that will be higher and all of that. So I understand the salary cap rose, but it's pretty rare to have a top executive. Duke Tobin's not the GM in name, but he is the GM in operation. And for him to say that's how much this guy is going to make, not, oh, he'll be up there, but he will be there, that was pretty wild.
And I think even more important than that, we heard Zach Taylor, and we'll take a listen to this, say the exact same thing. Say that,
right, that language, highest paid non-quarterback. When I hear that, I hear the Bengals saying, hey, Rocky Arsenault, Jamar's agent, come to the table, please. Come over here. It's right here. There's a seat. Here, you can have Matt's seat. We need to have this conversation because, no, Jamar held in during training camp last year. He was there. He didn't practice. It turned out fine from a production standpoint on the field. He led the league in touchdowns, in receptions, and in receiving yards. But they wanted this done, and the quicker they get it done, the more they can figure out, well, can you keep T? Can you keep Trey Hendrickson? What else are you going to do for your defense? Because Duke Tobin made abundantly clear today,
yes.
they know their defense is not good enough, was not good enough, and they don't just want to roll that defense back out in the way that they probably would be generally okay with rolling the offense back out. And so to me, it's like, the sooner they get Jamar done, the more likely it is that you have T staying. Also, as an executive put it to me today, if you sign T first, you're basically just being like, hey, T, I'll give you a lot of money and I'll give Jamar like 10, 20% more. So you're kind of like resetting your own market for Jamar Chase, which you don't want to do. So I think even though T is the urgent one, my goal, if I'm Cincinnati, and I think Duke Tobin's goal based off what he told us up there and based off what he kind of signaled to Rocky Arsenault today is, hey, let's try and get Jamar down before free agency starts and by the time legal tampering starts and all of that. I mean, no, it's not tampering. He's on their team. And then if you can figure out, hey, well, do we keep T? Can we try and structure the contracts a little bit creatively? How much are we valuing Trey Hendrickson?
Yeah, it's a tricky spot for the Bengals. I mean, they have the cap room to do it. It's just, and I thought, and maybe I'm reading too much into this, but just listening to Duke Tobin talk about this, you just are reminded that these decisions go above the general manager. You know, he's not the general manager, but he basically is
the general manager.
Yeah, so because of just the way the Bengals organization is structured and,
right.
and everything like that, there these decisions go above him. Because if it was up to Duke, yeah, they'd just get these deals done, and I think they'd move forward and be whatever, but it's not. So let's just play a little prediction game. Because I think if T. Higgins was available, why would the Patriots just not, like, jump on
I was about to
thing?
Say, the biggest reason I don't think that T. Higgins stays in Cincinnati is because I think
so
the
you
Patriots
don't think he,
are going to be
think
not
he does.
Back. I think that it will be hard for the Bengals to turn down what a team like the Patriots would offer. I think they tag him, and then I think the offers are just going to be really good because if you're the Patriots and you have your young quarterback in Drake May, you want that guy, and you know that guy's out there, and you know that there are contract issues in Cincinnati that you can exploit, part of which, as you mentioned, go back to ownership and an unwillingness to have some of those multi-year guarantees after the first year. And so if I'm Mike Vrabel, I'm saying I want him or I want an A.J. Brown type if you can convince Philly to send him over and, hey, Mike Vrabel coached A.J. Brown in,
yeah,
in Tennessee,
I mean,
and all
that.
but I think that when you see that, I think the Patriots need T. Higgins more than the Bengals need T. Higgins, and that's what it's going to come down to. I don't think they're just going to let him walk. I think they're going to tag him, but I think that they're going to get a pretty good deal on, hey, if you can get like 3 more defenders for T. Higgins, and then you see that Joe Burrow is probably going to elevate any target on the field, and you still have Jamar Chase, can you justify that? I don't know. But I will say, one of the things that's always interesting in this league is, yes, some teams maybe are a little more talented, but the teams that really win are a team that have a clear identity.
Yeah.
And the Bengals had a clear identity this year in their passing game. Now, and they were able to win games. I know they were like a game short of the playoffs, but they were able to win games without their defense being very good. So it's kind of a philosophical question of, would you rather be pretty good at a lot of things or so much better than everybody else at one thing? And I actually think the latter is a really compelling way to win in this league.
I agree. You just can't be 32nd in the other part of it, which is
why not
be the worst team? Well, because then you are one game out of the postseason. You don't don't get into the dance. And
I mean, then you light it up. And that's also part of the reason why Ja'Marr Chase is leading the league in so many numbers. And Joe Burrow is because they kept having to just light it up and come back and all of that.
100%. Okay, so the Patriots have $128 million in cap space. I mean, just more cap space than you could possibly. Like, there's not enough good players in free agency to spend that money on. So they also have, obviously, the fourth overall pick. They're not going to send that for T. Higgins, but they have the 38th overall pick, their second round pick. They have the 69th overall pick in the third round. They have the 77th overall pick from Atlanta, a third rounder in the Matthew Judon trade. Yikes, that did not work out for the Atlanta Falcons. So a second and a third, maybe another pick next year, and you make T. Higgins a top five paid wide receiver in the league. I mean, again, I think it's a doable deal. I think it would have to be kind of a last resort for Cincinnati. And I also think from T. Higgins' perspective, ultimately, like, it's just going to be really hard to turn down, like, top five wide receiver money. I think that the Bengals are not giving that to him, but the Patriots could. And ultimately, though, I think you have to ask yourself, am I in a better position from a career perspective being Drake May's number one wide receiver or Joe Burrow's number two wide receiver? And
there's a case for both.
There's a case for both. I think if it was me, he just straight up projects better as the Bengals' number two receiver than he does a true number one receiver.
Hmm, yeah.
However.
But remember, Ja'Marr Chase isn't going to be on the other side of the field when you're playing in New England.
That is very true. And he's just exactly what the Patriots need. A perimeter receiver, somebody that we're penciling in 120 targets, bare minimum at the beginning of the season. So I do think it makes sense. So your prediction is he goes?
I think my prediction is he goes. My prediction is Cincinnati wants to keep him, but his agent isn't getting to the table with that deal. And because there's so much inertia on the deal and so much pressure because the Patriots want a deal and are willing to put together a package, I think it's a timing question of T. Higgins and his agent's willingness to do a deal compared to the Patriots' willingness to make a trade, which one becomes high pressure first. And I think it's going to be the Patriots. And also, again, the whole deadlines make deals. They're going to want this figured out soon because it impacts everything else they both do in free agency. This isn't something you want to figure out in July.
My prediction is he stays. So if you're keeping track at home, the insider, the reporter, the in-the-know person says he leaves, and the podcast bozo says he stays.
To be clear, everything Duke Tobin said today suggests that you are right, but also we had Omar Khan, the Steelers GM, get up there last year and say that he had full faith in Kenny Pickett.
Not a wonderful place. Indianapolis is a great town. The Combine, fun event. Not a bastion for truth telling here. Yeah. So, all right, let's talk about some other free agent wide receivers here real quick. Because basically, if you look at this list, and some of the guys here, like Davante Adams, Cooper Kupp, those guys we know Kupp will either be traded or cut. Adams is going to get cut. It's basically T. Higgins in the olds, really. I mean, Chris Godwin kind of stands out because, I don't know, I mean, I'm just such a Godwin fan, and he was he legitimately had the best season. He was having the best season of his career until the injury, but he is a guy that's coming off an injury. He's drafted in 2017. He's getting close towards 30. So it's Chris Godwin, it's Cooper Kupp, Davante Adams, Amari Cooper, Stephon Diggs. Those are kind of the main guys. Any sort of inkling in terms of what the market for these players may be? Any of them stand out to you as someone that you've kind of reported on?
I mean, Devontae is really interesting to me because he's kind of got history with some of the guys of if the Raiders need a receiver, does he go back with the regime? Well, if the Patriots don't get T. Higgins, if I'm them, I want Davante Adams. But what does that mean for a Davante Adams, Josh McDaniels reunion?
Do you have any sense of that relationship, what that was like? Because I do think that that is appealing, and you brought this up earlier, and I had not considered Adams with the Patriots at all. But do you have any sense of that?
I think if I'm the Patriots and I don't get T. Higgins, Davante Adams is my next goal on that list. I mean, who would you rather have? I don't think they're getting Chris Godwin. I think Buccaneers seem number one there, or maybe Spytek, John Spytek, the general manager of the Raiders who came from the Buccaneers, tries to pull him over. But I think that the Buccaneers seem to get their guys taken care of. They're also not paying top dollar for Baker Mayfield, so there's no reason they should need to lose a receiver, in my opinion. I mean, Amari Cooper didn't have an impact in Buffalo, so if I'm New England, I'm not saying, yeah, he's going to be our savior. Now, maybe he can help someone. Stephon Diggs, I guess you've seen him in division, but also he's a lot. And I think they're kind of trying to – I don't know that And again, I have not talked to Mike Vrabel about this, but I don't know that Stefon Diggs strikes me as the type of player who Mike Vrabel is going to be like, yeah, you are following the plan I have. Like, Stefon Diggs kind of follows the plan that Stefon Diggs has.
Yeah. Also worth noting, though, when we just, I didn't think about this, but when we're talking about Vrabel and receivers, and he's had a little bit of like, ooh, when it comes to soft tissue stuff with the wide receivers, that's at least something to consider with T.
Yeah.
Adams. And obviously Diggs is coming off an injury, but Adams is interesting because I think he'd be like the exact right type of receiver to help a Drake May grow up, because he's still a strong separator,
yeah.
Somebody that can win inside out. He gives you that perimeter presence that the other guys on the roster don't give you. And like, I think if they bring in a slot option like Godwin, and where these guys line up really does matter, because even when you bring up Godwin with the Raiders, like, that doesn't really line up to me, because they already have a slot guy in Myers, they have a guy in Bowers who they want to use inside too. They need more of a pure perimeter presence, which Adams would check that box off. I don't think he's going back to the Raiders, but Godwin though to the Patriots, if you do that, then like, you're giving up on Jalen Polk. Like, you're giving up, you're not really probably prioritizing Pop Douglas anymore, but Adams being there would allow you to still have a path for some of these young guys to maybe develop.
And I think he's the type of receiver who does develop the young guys around him. I mean, these are things that Davante Adams is going to do. And I think when you have a young team and you want a veteran leadership presence, Davante Adams can help you out.
I like that Patriots. I also think the Chargers are interesting because he's talked about wanting to be on the West Coast. I think he'd get in line with the culture.
Yeah.
Devontae's
not a culture concern.
No. He's not. I
know he wanted out of Vegas, but there's a difference.
There's
like, even when Brandon Cooks wanted out of, what's it called? Out of Houston. This up?
Well, he's been traded a billion times.
Yeah, I know. Or when you think about DeAndre Hopkins, like, he's wanted out of places. But like, he's not, there's people who are always creating issues, and people who, once they realize something is untenable, make their voice heard so that they can move on.
Yeah, my guess is we can probably X off the Rams on Davante Adams' wish list if they go down the Jimmy Garoppolo path.
What if they go down the Aaron Rodgers path?
I think, that would be interesting. I just think there's a 0% chance that guy would ever want to play with Jimmy Garoppolo again. After you saw the clips from that Netflix show of I've never been hit so much in my effing life or whatever, and that's the Jimmy Garoppolo experience. So Adam's definitely a big domino to fall, and I think he's a guy that, if it's the Patriots, if it's the Chargers, I mean, he's somebody I'd be willing to invest in from a fantasy standpoint this year, because he's like 32 years old. That's always risky with the old receivers. I always say this, Jory, like, the number one thing I struggle with projecting at the wide receiver position, or the thing that, like, for my decades worth of research with receivers and charting and film and all this stuff, the one thing I think you kind of have to throw your hands up with is aging curves.
Yeah.
Because everybody, it's always different.
That the league is facing that same question. And I've heard Eagles executives talk about this of, hey, we're trying to figure out, when will that fall off be? How will it vary across positions? How will it vary across different people at the position? How much can we track that and anticipate? Do we have accurate models on it? But that's what I'm actually interested in with Amari Cooper. What do you think he has left in the tank, and where do you think he would want to go that actually needs someone, and where do you think would want him? Because he's someone who, when you go to what he did in Dallas, when you go to what he did in Cleveland, even Oakland, though he wasn't so happy there, I mean, until Buffalo, he was putting up regular 1,000-yard seasons for like 10 years.
And I thought he had the best two-year stretch of his career his first 2 years in Cleveland.
Right.
And
so just wherever Joe Flacco goes, Amari Cooper will go. Is that what you're telling me?
I don't know. You asked me like what Amari Cooper has left. I think that is the most difficult question of this free agent receiver crop, because he brings the skill set that a Cup or a Godwin, you know, even Diggs kind of transitioned into the slot last year with Houston. Like, Cooper is a pure perimeter player, but I mean, damn, Jory, like, when that trade happened to Buffalo, I thought that's exactly what the Bills need. That's exactly what they need, a man coverage beating X receiver.
And all he did was take defensive attention, not catch the ball much.
That one Rams game was like, all right. But it was all go routes and contested go routes too.
Wait, because speed's not Amari's strength.
No, but like,
which should help you if you're aging, because if speed's going to decline, but that's not what you were relying on.
But see, I think he always was a little bit overrated as a route runner. And
because he believes he's the best route runner in the league.
Yeah. And I think he got like that reputation because he came into the league as a polished player. But I always thought he was more of like a big play threat than he was a like true consistent three-level route runner. And that's why I think he was so good in Cleveland, because their receivers get to run a lot of like deep overs and post off play action, which allows you to be in single coverage situations. You know, maybe it's a man match zone coverage situation, and you can just get wide ass open there a little more, like, you know, probably 90% your creation, but also like that offense is going to give you a little bit of boost there too. And so maybe that's an issue for why it didn't work out in Buffalo too.
So Amari calls you up and says, Matt, you understand a bunch of different schemes. You understand what receivers have done in said schemes. You understand my skill set. Where should I go this year? Who should I be asking?
I'd be trying to come back to Buffalo, to be honest. Like, if he's healthy, you know, I think that's another thing we should talk about too, is like,
yeah, his wrist.
Yeah, the wrist. And it just felt like there was always kind of a little bit of something there. I would be trying to get back to Buffalo, because I still think they need that skill set. And I think them finding that skill set is going to be difficult.
Okay.
Like every good team like needs an X receiver. The damn Chiefs need one. The Lions need one. I mean, all the and not there's not that many out there. And so if he still has something left in his game, that's probably what I'd try to do.
Here you go. We have our answer.
Or the Rams, potentially. Again, another team that needs that kind of like threat.
I think McVay would like him.
Any other free agent wide receiver predictions, nugs, anything like that?
I mean, I think we hit it pretty well. I have no idea on Cooper Kupp, but I will say the Commanders have money to spend and a quarterback that if I'm a receiver, I want to play with.
Yeah, see, I have been saying that they were the best Godwin team because they need a slot option. They need somebody over the middle of the field, and they need someone to give them a little oomph in the run game too. And that also Cooper Kupp kind of – there's a lot of similarity there. I mean, yeah. Cooper Kupp was playing the big slot role in this offense. Then Liam Cohen goes down to Tampa Bay and makes Chris Godwin that player too. So I think from that standpoint, Cooper Kupp would be a great fit with the Commanders. And again, he's kind of what they need there. So,
yeah. And Commanders general manager Adam Peters did speak today, and he got up there and he said that they will be active in free agency because they have to be. They just have so many guys who are going to be hitting the market and so many holes. And even though they were way ahead of schedule making it to the NFC Championship in the first year of Adam Peters, of Dan Quinn, and of Jaden Daniels, they are going to be going after guys. So for all of these names, keep an eye on the Commanders as an interest, even if it's hard to predict based off what other teams want, who the Commanders will land with.
That's the state of the current Commanders. In our final segment after this break, we're going to talk about last year's Commanders and who could maybe be that ecosystem that takes a leap right after this. Okay, we're back. Jory, we were talking about the Commanders a little bit before the break and how they were that ecosystem that launched up last year. The listeners that are playing the ecosystem drinking game at home are – they've been waiting, but now it's finally time to get trashed here. So the Commanders took that big leap last year. I know you were talking about this with me a little bit earlier. Who are some teams that could potentially be that sort of based on what you're hearing and what you're seeing right now?
I will say I'm curious about the Jaguars, because one of the things – that most allowed the Commanders to take off is quarterback.
Yeah.
And I still think Trevor Lawrence has it.
Okay. I'm not the biggest Trevor, like I'm kind of a Trevor nihilist, or maybe like I'm agnostic. I'm agnostic about
Trevor Lawrence. Yeah. Agnostic.
I'm agnostic about Trevor Lawrence. I don't believe or disbelieve. I'm kind of willing to look at the evidence.
I think you disbelieve, but carry on.
No. See, this is the problem with you people like you. Okay,
you
want to put me in a box. Like I either got to be one or another. Let me just be in the middle here. Let me kind of be a centrist.
But do you believe in Trevor or do you not?
I'm agnostic. I'm willing to believe if the evidence shows, and I'm willing to not believe if the evidence shows there's nothing
but
there.
But I think that means that you could end up believing,
sure,
but you do not currently believe.
See, you're trying to put me in a box, and like I don't appreciate this. I'm agnostic.
I'm not trying to keep you in the same box now and in the future, but I'm trying to say that you're currently in a box and you're open to moving. It's like the door is open of the box.
My posture suggests I'm backing further and further away from believing.
So I'm clearly the physically intimidating one of this
podcast. Obviously,
yeah,
for sure. I mean, I've been pretty much shaken ever since Jory showed up here.
Okay.
She actually only got on the podcast because she threatened me physically. So let's get on the note.
I am interested to see, what do you think the Chicago Bears are going to do in 1 year? Because I actually think that it would be playing too much into the hype to think that you give Caleb Williams, Ben Johnson, and all of a sudden things are fixed. But there's clearly that potential. The ceiling is there.
Yeah.
I have questions about the floor. How do you view that marriage?
Well, both of these teams, I mean, Jacksonville and Chicago, like we can kind of group them together because I think they're very similar in that they have quarterback. When you're talking about reclamation project, like guys on new teams, these guys are essentially not reclamation projects fully, but with Trevor, because I think Trevor is a he's a starting quarterback in the league. I think that is like settled. Like he is a guy that you
are you willing to put yourself in that box?
Yeah, I just said it.
Okay. Just want to make sure. Words matter, Matt.
Words matter. He is a starting quarterback in the league. I believe it. I think it should be a settled thing. But what is the ceiling of that player? That is something we're still deciding. And I think that ceiling can be elevated by a play caller like Liam Cohen. I think on the other side of it with Chicago, same thing, where we're looking at a quarterback who I think showed enough last year to say like he's a starting quarterback, but the ceiling there is going to be decided a lot by the play caller in year two. So there's a lot of connective tissue between these two teams. If you had to bet on it, and I'll tell you which one I think too after this, if you had to bet on it, which of those two is like more likely to work out as this breakthrough offense in year two?
Jacksonville or Chicago?
Yes.
I'm more confident in Jacksonville because I think you've got your receiver, you've got your guy. And I think for me in Chicago, and I don't want to offend you, I know you're a receiver guy, they got three great receivers and they're like, offensive line, it's fine. He's going to have people to throw to. And it didn't work.
Yeah.
It did not work. And I know there were a lot of things that didn't work in Chicago, but I think they went a little much too, like, if we get our fun toys, it doesn't matter if we have the foundation of the house. The foundation of the house matters, and they didn't have it. And
they were looking at the dessert menu before they ate their vegetables.
Absolutely. And like, as someone who's very ready to go get her vegetables after the shot, I think that's important.
You're sitting here in the middle of this podcast thinking about vegetables,
can I get some good cauliflower? That was what I was thinking about a minute ago, if you're asking.
That is the most insane thing that anyone said on this podcast in a long time. And I host the show, so that is saying something. No, I'm with you though on Jacksonville because I still have some faith in those Chicago receivers being a lot better players this upcoming season than they were last season. One, because Keenan Allen's not going to be there. And I think that most likely, he's not going to be there. And I think that just gives you a little bit more of a settled picture there in terms of there's two guys instead of three. I do think I ran this take by Kevin Clark on his podcast in the middle of the season that like maybe the Bears have too many good pass catchers. And I think he thought the take was stupid. He didn't say stupid, but I think he kind of thought it was a little bit stupid.
I do think there's something to be said that sometimes you lose a guy and you're like, oh, so now it's on me. Okay, then I'm going to rise to that occasion. And I'm not saying that any of these guys don't care. I mean, especially – I don't know DJ Moore, but if you've talked to Roma Dunsay literally ever or watched him talk, no one cares more. That guy cares. He always does it right. But there's something psychologically about needing to rise to the occasion that subconsciously, whether or not you want it, you often elevate your play.
And I do know DJ a little bit, and I talked to him recently at the Super Bowl, and this is a guy who has never been accused of not believing in something or maybe letting his play show like some questions there, and he's been in some rough situations throughout the course of his career.
To make business decisions.
And I think last year was the first time we maybe saw like what's going on with DJ Moore. And I think that brings more to the point of not only was there maybe a hierarchy and like a politics issue in the receiver room, I also think there was just a general lack of belief in what they were being asked to do from an offensive standpoint. And I don't think that will be the case with Ben Johnson.
So you don't think three different play callers in year, three different offensive coordinators in a year is the best way to get a rookie quarterback on board?
I do not. Little advice for the teams. If anybody, a lot of GMs, coaches here, if they want to get my hot take, that would be one of them.
One offensive coordinator in the first year better than three.
One offensive coordinator every year. Probably better than three, but
the second year, I mean,
yeah. But Jacksonville specifically, why I think they have the better shot at this is one because I think we understand like who Trevor is more so than we understand who Caleb is. That's number one, and number two for all these like okay. Where's DJ Moore lining up in Ben Johnson's offense? Where is Roma Dunsay lining up? Like Brian Thomas Jr. is going to line up everywhere, and he was one of the best receivers in the league last year, period, point blank. And Liam Cohen said today at his presser that we're going to build the passing game around Brian Thomas Jr. That gives me a lot of faith for a guy that we saw deploy receivers in creative ways. I mean, get Chris Godwin reactivated. Like, I mean, I think Dave Canales is a great coach, but he was not able to get Chris Godwin fully activated. Liam Cohen comes in there. He gets him fully activated. That makes me pretty encouraged about what they're going to do from that perspective. They also have a lot of resources to potentially add more pass catchers. They just got to fix the offensive line, too. And they know that. That's what they've talked about.
I'm glad you gave us and the listeners that viewpoint of Liam Cohen, because I was a little bit confused slash remain a little bit confused about the Liam Cohen hype for several reasons, including I didn't feel like he was the variable between the 2 years in Tampa. Like, he wasn't there and they played well, and then he was there and they played on. I'm not saying they did in the same ways or to the exact same level of production, but I didn't think that like he was the magic sauce there.
I think he took an offense that was good and made it better. And I think just pushing those right buttons.
But did all of those players just playing together a second year after already having a good year under their belt, how much do you give to that?
Well, and this is what's funny about kind of pulling together, why I mentioned the offensive line, because you can't have the 2024 Bucks conversation without the fact that they fixed the offensive line. And like they got Grant Barton, who was an immediate hit at center. Luke Getteke played better. Tristan Wirfs goes to the left side. He's an all pro on the right side. He goes to the left side, becomes an all pro. I mean, that's incredible. Cody Mock is better in his second season. Ben Bredesen's a free agent that they signed for nothing and got great play out of there. So did they fix the offensive line or did the system set them up to run the ball better? Also, by the way, they draft Bucky Irving. He's a big part of this too. So there's a lot of variables in like how they fix that run game. But that's why I think it's important that they fix the offensive line in Jacksonville, because that is where things have to start.
And Chicago.
So I think if for either of these teams to do it, they got to fix the front. I mean, from a fantasy perspective, we're going to sit here and like – again, what are the roles in Chicago? Like, who else is Jacksonville adding? What matters first is can they get this offensive line working from a communication standpoint and a consistency standpoint? I mean, you can't have, like, all these combinations of guys out there. Like, you need to settle on five guys, get them onboarded in the offseason through training camp into week one so that there's, like, some communication and consistency there. Because that was a secret sauce for Tampa that, I mean, there was a lot of consistency on that line all season long.
Which, by the way, I'll say makes Jaden Daniels' rookie year that much more impressive, because I get that they brought over Tyler Biadasz at center and they did some stuff, but I did not think that the Commanders had done enough for their offensive line this year to have the success that they did, and they managed.
They managed, and I think that's a credit to Jaden Daniels. It's a credit to Cliff Kingsbury and just the entire offense in general. Real quick, before we let you go, Jory, we're talking about ecosystems that might be better. Got to at least address Dallas, because like you said, that's where your roots in this industry come from. Nate and I were talking about the Cowboys kind of in the staff and the hires, and that, yeah, even if you can quibble, let's put it nicely, say you can quibble with the process that arrived at Brian Schottenheimer being the head coach, I actually do think that this offense from a staff standpoint and just some of the guys that are in the building can be a really good offense that looks, I mean, it looks like a revived unit because Dak Prescott plays 17 games next year.
I think what I love about this is during the season, I kept being like, please hire Hank Fraley, the Detroit Lions offensive line coach, as your offensive coordinator. And while they didn't get Hank Fraley, they did hire an offensive line coach as offensive coordinator, which I did not think they'd do. I thought that Jerry Jones and co would be, oh, we need flash. Oh, we need quarterbacks coach, maybe a receivers coach, probably not a running back coach, and definitely not an offensive line coach. And that is where the Cowboys most needed to improve. That is the starting point. We've talked about this over and over again. And when we were talking about Cincinnati and the case for keeping T. Higgins, I said that in a league of parity, you have to decide, do you want to be good at a lot of things or great at something and have your identity? When the Cowboys were great in Dak Prescott's era, and it's not a knock on Dak Prescott, Jalen Hurts just won a Super Bowl with a fantastic offensive line, where Patrick Mahomes just lost the Super Bowl without a strong or even manageable in the Super Bowl offensive line. But Dak Prescott's strength was at a time when the Cowboys' identity was their offensive line. That was what they did better than everyone else, and that was where they knew they had the advantage. I don't know that they've got the talent to do that and be the number one offensive line, but they finally hired a coach and are prioritizing a scheme, it seems, that is going to elevate and get all of their protections together, get their run blocking scheme a little bit cleaner, and really make sure that they are not just relying on Dak to go save them from everything and just find CeeDee. And I think that that is the number one reason you should have success, because I also think that Brian Schottenheimer could have said, I'm a quarterback guy. I believe in the quarterbacks. I'm going to be the passing game, and that's what we're going to go. And he said, no, I'm a quarterback guy. I've got the passing game coverage, so let me get someone who's going to be essentially the head coach of the running game and the offensive line. I mean, you've seen this work at a lot of other teams, run game coordinator, pass game coordinator. I mean, Philadelphia, among others, had versions of this. Jeff Stoutland, their offensive line coach, is their run game coordinator, and it worked really well. So, yeah. it's not sexy, but fixing that can do wonders for that team.
And just getting stuff off Schottenheimer's plate is going to be big too. Because
yeah, they hired a former head coach, a defensive coordinator, in Matt Eberflus.
100%.
So he can be head coach of the defense. You'll have a head coach of the defense, a head coach of culture and passing game, and a head coach of the running game.
Yeah. No, I think that makes sense because you know this better than anybody. The Cowboys head coach, you got to deal with a lot of nonsense. And then also, by the way, you have to be the head coach. You have to be the play caller. You weren't the play caller last year, so you're taking on a new role there. And obviously, first-time head coach. So it makes a lot of sense. I agree with you, though. Like, as much as I have talked about on this show that I think, like, man, you add a number two receiver here and you bring Rico Dowdle back maybe, or you add like a high-end talent here. We're ready to rock from an offensive standpoint. I think the offensive line, like Tyler Guyton's huge. We got to get him going. Tyler Smith's one of the best guards in the league. And Cooper Beebe was
gonna
great.
Have a year of experience now,
and he was really good as a center in his rookie season. So if we can fix right guard, we can fix right tackle. Like, yeah, that could potentially actually be, as much as I'm sitting here talking about number two receiver and running back, and producer Colin can't stop messaging me about what if Ted McMillan is there at 12, and what if Ashton Jeanty is like every other day. These are the texts I'm getting from Colin. The messages
I've worked with him for like, what is it, 2018 till now?
Yeah, that was a pretty good impression, right?
Yeah, 7 years. So I've been getting these texts. Don't worry.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think you and I are probably in the same boat on this one.
If you ever want to like log off for a week but not want to be behind, though, just text him. He'll have you covered.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, Colin is an incredible
producer.
What
am I forgetting on this list of questions when I interview Dak? And he's like, oh, yeah, this. And I'm like, yeah, that's the clip we ended up using for the headline.
Yeah, Colin's an incredible producer, but, you know. Enough already with the damn Cowboys. But as much as he's been talking about that, and I've been feeding into it too, the offensive line could be
ready to
go. You're
like, less Cowboys, more Rashad Bateman.
Oh, my God. I can't believe we made the whole podcast and not talk about Rashad Bateman.
I made sure that we didn't get out of here without
talking. By the way, I mean, can you at least tell me like I was right to be talking about it last year?
I'm happy for you.
Guy scored like a bunch of touchdowns for one of the best offenses in the league.
A box you're comfortable being in. We found it.
On that note, I think we can end the podcast here. Jory, thank you so much for doing this. And thank you so much for being the power, the force at Yahoo that was able to get me to the NFL Scouting Combine.
Well, let's do it again next year in Indianapolis. I expect you back. And so if the words work this year, let's do it again.
Well, if
Combine 2026, I'll see you at this table.
If I'm not back, then something's gone really wrong.
And
on that note, tell the people what you're working on that they can check out.
Yeah, I'll be at the Combine all week, Monday to Sunday. I'm here. I've got something today. Aaron Rodgers, the Jets. Jets head coach Aaron Glenn said that he's pissed off that no one's respecting the rest of the team, believing they can't win without Aaron Rodgers. So a little bit on the Rodgers market, a little bit on the Jets. We'll get spicy there. We've got a Bengals piece that's already up on the site. Already got Jamar Chase. I'll fill it out with T. Higgins and a couple other things. And tomorrow, actually, the NFLPA will be releasing their report cards. Always has a lot of interest. Even if it's not the fantasy interest, it's just like interesting.
It's gossip.
Yeah, it's gossip. When workplace dynamic. So keep an eye out for that. So yeah, I'll be on a couple more shows with Inside Coverage this week. I'll have articles throughout the week and also articles leading up to the draft on some pre-draft guides, as well as some themes and trends that we're seeing in the league.
So translation, Jory is working her ass off and you should consume all of that content. Make sure you do it. All right, that is going to do it for today's episode. Again, shout out to Jory. Shout out to everybody here at the NFL
Scouting.
Shout out
to Rashad Bateman.
Dude, shout the F out to Rashad Bateman. Shout out to all of you. We will be back on Thursday. Big show coming on Thursday. Some guests, some exciting stuff. Huge things are happening. It's basically this idiot learns about this NFL draft. You're not going to want to miss that. All that and more coming up on Thursday's show. We're out.